Well, we've got a real treat today. We've got pianist Nicholas Olenchu in the studio. Welcome to the show, Nicholas.
Thank you so much. It's great to be with you, Keith.
So glad to have a chance to sit down and talk to you and hear some music from you. That's for sure. I know you have a lot of originals to share with us today. What would you like to start with?
I'd like to start with a composition of mine. It's called New Blues.
Oh, that's great. What a great way to start. And that's a new tune of yours, you said.
Yeah, relatively recent. I'd say definitely 2019.
Great. Well, I look forward to hearing some more originals from you. You are finishing up your master's degree here at Western Michigan University.
Yep, last semester.
It's been a real journey for you the past few years. Let's go back to the beginning. You're from New York.
Yes, Long Island, New York. Floral Park, to be precise.
I don't think I ever made it to that part of Long Island.
Oh, it's okay. There's some things out there. There's the, I think, Floral Park Terrace. You might have done a gig there, too. Bar mitzvahs, parties.
You know, that might have happened. What's Floral Park known for, besides bar mitzvahs and parties?
That's a good question. I know it mostly for its pizza. I love the local pizzeria. That's what I'm a little bit of an addict to pizza, but recently I've given up bread and stuff like that, so I do miss it dearly. But other than that, I mean, it's known for
Nicholas Olenchu.
There you go. I didn't want to say it, but thank you, Keith.
Pretty soon they're going to have your name on a plaque somewhere, I'm sure.
Oh.
So how did you start playing the piano or playing music in Floral Park, Long Island, New York?
Well, I was lucky enough to have parents that really encouraged it from a young age. They tried to put me in piano lessons in about kindergarten, and it was not working. You know, the teacher was like, I like chocolate ice cream. I like chocolate ice cream. And, you know, it didn't take. I was always bored. And so it took a few years until I actually took to it. But then about third grade, I started and really enjoyed it. I had a private classical teacher who I studied with from third grade to about seventh grade. And then I also kind of fell off the boat then. But right around eighth grade, my brother started studying jazz bass, and I heard him playing it all the time, and I was just like, wow, what a great sound. And my brother and I were both relatively quiet, and we didn't have a lot of things to bond out at that age. So through music, we really had that fun, interesting, interactive way of getting to know each other better.
And he's older.
He's slightly older, yeah. He's about, I think, 28 now, and he lives in New Orleans right now. He tours a fair amount as a bassist, and he also plays locally.
And when's the last time you all played together?
Oh, that's a great question. It's probably been almost a year now, just because whenever we see each other, we're in a place where either he doesn't have his bass or there's not a piano. It's just right. It's been a while, but I'd like to reconnect that way.
So you said you kind of fell away for a while. were there other another focus or?
No, I mean, it was just tough studying classical music for me because I didn't feel like I understood the music I was playing. A lot of the times I would just be learning pieces, you know, just reading the sheet music and learning the piece and then performing it. And there was no analysis or understanding of what I was playing. So it's just like, I'm just kind of parroting this music and I didn't feel a connection to it in that way.
So you heard jazz and there was something there that you connected with.
There's immediate connection there. Yeah, especially at 7th and 8th grade, I found the music of Oscar Peterson and took a huge liking and found so much depth in it. And I couldn't stop. I would play along to records and try to imitate. And with my terrible technique, I didn't know what I was doing. But I just tried. And, you know, it was fun to steal all that stuff at a young age.
I mean, a lot of us, we didn't discover Oscar Peterson in 7th and 8th grade. I know I didn't. I didn't discover him until college. Mm-hmm. So that must have been amazing at that young age to hear this music. I mean, of course, you're probably listening to pop music on some level.
Yeah, definitely. At that age, I spent a lot of time in the car with my dad. He would drive me around to most places, and we're listening to a lot of pop music, but more from his era, honestly. We listened to a lot of Simon and Garfunkel and the Beatles and Paul Simon and Joni Mitchell and just a great selection of music from that era, but I never really was tuned into the radio.
Okay. You were a little bit hipper than most middle school students.
I'd say so, yeah. But I was also really lucky because my brother's bass teacher, a man by the name of Pete Coco, fantastic bassist and New York-based guy, he was my first jazz piano teacher. He had some basic fundamental understanding of how to play the piano in harmony, and he kind of led me by the hand and showed me modes and the blues and just basic forms like autumn leaves. And through that, he really gave me a nice bedrock of what to work on. And he also turned me on to all these great early records, you know, all the Miles In records, you know, anything that ends with IN apostrophe.
Right.
Showed me all that and all the Oscar
late
stuff.
50s.
And I was really lucky because when I was turned and tuned into Oscar, there was an event that happened that kind of really pushed me to even pursue his music more. So in about 8th grade, it was my birthday, and my birthday falls right on December 23rd. So right before the holidays, my family and I, we would all travel into the city and go to Union Square Market.
Yeah.
And it's super fun around the holidays, lots of awesome stuff to check out and cool booths with different foods and drinks and gifts. And we would all be getting last minute gifts for each other or finding stuff that we really wanted for ourselves. So back in 8th grade, there was still a Tower Records right by there.
Oh, yeah.
And I found myself sneaking out to there and looking for Oscar Peterson records. And I bought Sea Jam Blues and a couple others that I really love. We get requests.
Yep, yeah.
It's fantastic music. And then on the way home, we're listening to NPR because that's, you know, we're in that level of hip or whatever. And it turned out that Oscar Peterson passed on my birthday that year. And it really hit me hard. I was like, wow, I'm really checking out his music and I find such a deep connection in it. It felt like kind of the world sending me a signal saying, keep on going with this. And I have been going with it.
Isn't that amazing that you remember when and where you got those records?
And I think we lose that connection now with digital music. It's so easy to pick up a million records and only check them out for a few minutes. But at that age, I was just voraciously listening and listening more intently than maybe I do now, because it's just, there are so many distractions that sometimes it's hard to turn off your phone, your emails, your texts, and just really sit and enjoy music and tune into the minutiae.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. And when I talk like that to my students, I always feel so old, you know?
Yeah, I feel like an old
student. When I was your age, we only had cassette tapes, mm-hmm. and we had one in our car for 2 months, and we really memorized it, you know? But you're right. And I remember some of those times and places, too, where I got those records. You know, I was in Chicago, and I went to the Jazz Record Mart, and I got this Ralph Peterson cassette tape or this CD or something, and I'll never forget that day, you know? And yeah, then you just devour it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then you really know it, and you become just intimate with the recording, the tunes, all the players. You can sing their solos, and it has such a huge impact on us. And yeah, I hope we can continue to inspire our friends and students to do more of that, because it's really tough now.
Yeah, it is. It definitely is.
I remember thousands of tunes in your pocket.
Yeah, that's for sure. I remember going, I was not the greatest in math as a kid, and I remember around the same age, I would be going to the library to get tutored, and the only way they could get me to the library is like, okay, you can take out the limit of CDs every week. You can take out 5, but you're going to have to get tutored. I was like, okay, I can do that deal. And then I got better at math and also still kept on listening more.
Nice. Yeah. My library was a huge resource for me too growing up, especially when I didn't have any records. And so I would just go and check out whatever they had. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just like, gosh, I don't know what even to listen to, but this looks interesting.
Exactly. It's no risk. And you can just say, oh, that looks cool. Why not?
Yeah. So, you spoke about Pete Coco.
Yeah.
And then there was another teacher, I think you mentioned, Brenda Earle.
Yeah, Brenda Earle, now Brenda Earle Stokes. She's married to a fabulous guy. But yeah, I was lucky enough to study with her through 8th grade through high school. And she took that bedrock of knowledge that I got from Pete and just really helped me run with it and pushed me to really develop myself just as a musician in general, as a vocalist and pianist. She's a fantastic New York-based pianist and vocalist, tours internationally. She just finished a tour in Australia. And yeah, I was just lucky to work with her, and she was very supportive and kind and helped foster that love and dedication to this music.
Well, let's hear some more music.
Sure.
I know your grandmother was a big encourager.
Yeah, I was very lucky to have my parents supported me very much in that way, and they helped finance my lessons and pushed me to really practice and enjoy this music. But my grandmother, whenever she would be over, which is often, she lived about 15 minutes away, a walk away, and she would always just want me to play piano. Anytime she'd say, Nicholas, I want you on the piano. And I was like, okay. And it was always really fun to, even at a young age, to be playing something simple and for her to enjoy it and appreciate it. So this piece that I wrote recently is called Associated, and it's inspired by my relationship with her and walking around town, because she didn't have a car. So we would walk around and do errands and just spend time together. And Associated was the local grocery store. And I just have fond memories of getting groceries with her and then going back and cooking. So this is called Associated. Thank you.
Wow, that's really beautiful.
Thank you so much.
And on that piano, I know you commented earlier about how powerful of an instrument that is.
Very much so.
It really does speak, but your touch can be so delicate, and it's you really, really made it sing in a delicate way. And I know you can play with power, too. I've really heard you... I've heard you've hurt some pianos before.
I've heard yeah, it. I mean, I've got some big, meaty hands, and they can do some damage. But as a person, I find myself being more soft-spoken, and sometimes I find there's a lot of power in not having to say a lot, not being too verbose or bloviating, and just getting straight to the heart of the matter, whether it's musically or interpersonally. I think it's a meaningful thing.
So I know you've had some wonderful opportunities in the last few years in terms of studying and some competitions.
True.
And, you know, you're kind of a big deal, Nicholas.
I don't know.
You've done some pretty cool things. I want to hear about the Aspen Jazz Academy. You had a chance to study with Christian McBride out there.
Sure. That was
When was that?
That was this past August. And it was a fantastic experience. It's based in Aspen, Colorado. And in order to get in, all you had to do was write a short letter talking about your accomplishments and why you believe you're a good fit for the program, and then submit some examples of your playing in a small group, solo, and in a big band. And it was just kind of, oh, there's not a huge application fee to try it. So I was like, why the heck not? And I was lucky enough to be selected along with a big band's worth of people. And we were all sent to Aspen, Colorado to work with Christian McBride, as well as Shelley Berg and Diane Reeves, and just a whole cast of characters that were just, oh, so inspiring. I mean, also there's bassist Reginald Veal. But anyway, it was fantastic because it was very reassuring to me to be working with such high-level students. You know, I really am proud of where I've gone to school, UNT and Western Michigan University, both great places, but maybe they don't have the clout as a place like Juilliard or Manhattan School, or, you know, like those big names can be scary sometimes. But then getting to play and work with all these fantastic musicians from those areas and realizing that I could hold my own was very inspiring and encouraging to me. And what was also encouraging to me was working with Christian McBride himself. He was just one of the most warmest people you could imagine in the world. He's just like, anytime he talks to you, it's just like he's giving you a big bear hug with his voice.
Yeah.
And it was inspiring to me because I always try to be kind and empathetic and understanding to other people. And I find a lot of the times people can be very vibey in this music. Sometimes people are trying to cut each other or position themselves above others.
Really competitive.
Exactly, yeah. And Christian just didn't ever make himself in that position. You know, he was just kind and warm and just so easy to work with. And we learned a lot through him, but it was never from the place of like, man, I'm better than you. It's like, no, we're all pursuing this music wholeheartedly, and he just happens to be a couple thousand miles ahead of us, but we're all on the same road. We talked about records earlier and how it's important to really study this music and understand it on more than the surface level. And he's one of those people that just has an encyclopedic knowledge of this music and other musics too. It was after our final concert with the big band, we were all hanging out in the lobby and just like sharing stories, and someone brought out a Bluetooth speaker and was just playing lots of different cuts from jazz and pop. And probably every other song, Christian would take out a $20 bill, put it on the table, and he'd be like, who's playing piano on this? Who's playing this and that? And we'd all be, he'd just be stumping us all because it'd be like pop records from the 60s. It'd be like Motown sessions, and he would just know everyone on the record and like why they were on the session. It was just fantastic to hear that he really pursues not only jazz, but all musics in such a wholehearted way. And that really encouraged me to keep on digging because there's always more.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and all those other types of music influence, you know, when we hear him play the acoustic bass, we think, oh, he's just into Ray Brown or Ron Carter or something. And then you realize he's a big Bootsy Collins fan and loves James Brown.
Exactly.
And he said Motown. And yeah, he's, think, well, maybe that has something to do with why he's so funky, you know, that, you know, that's great.
Man. Yeah. His music is just colored by all these different inspirational musicians outside of jazz.
What a great experience. And Aspen's not a bad place to hang out in.
Not at all. Yeah, a beautiful city and just, yeah, not a bad day of weather. And getting to, I can't even remember the mountain that was in town, but we got to take the ski lift up and just see the beautiful view of Aspen from above. And it's just a magnificent place to hang out.
It was in the summertime, though.
In the summertime, yeah. So you don't get the skiing, but you get the beautiful greenery and just lots of... It's still a nice tourist place to go in the off-season. It's not as expensive, I imagine.
And then we've got some piano competitions that you've done really well in. Talk about that.
Sure. Well, the first one that I was lucky enough to be selected to compete in was the American Jazz Pianist Competition. And that's specifically, it's for pianists under the age of 25. And I am a person who's maybe not always confident in their abilities. And I always think there's someone better out there. And I was hitting 24 and I was like, well, shoot, I should probably apply to this because I don't have many years more to try. So luckily I was selected for it. And I got to go out to Melbourne, Florida, and compete with a group of fantastic young pianists who are all very inspiring to work with. And I think the best part was the sense of camaraderie. The whole place was set inside of a piano factory, or excuse me, a piano store. And there were about 20 pianos in this big showroom, and we'd all just, during the day, because we only performed at night, and then during the day we had this free time to hang out and check out Florida, but we mostly just ended up playing together because we were all just like, what are you doing? What are you doing? And it was just, it was great because there was really no, there were no bad vibes and everyone was just about the music and about working to be better. And the competition itself was very interesting because we got to hear each other perform. We did short sets. We did 15-minute sets of solo piano and then trio piano with bass and drums. And it was just, I mean, at the end of both concerts, I was just like, I have no idea how they're going to pick anyone for this. It's just like, what's the point of even trying? And luckily, in that competition, I was fortunate enough to place second. I received the Bösendorfer Prize, which includes some contracted concerts back in Florida, which are happening in the spring. And I got a cash prize that was also very nice to receive.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
And how many pianists again were there?
There were seven.
Seven of you.
Yeah.
Isn't that great when you get with a group of folks like that mm-hmm. that are very talented and everyone's just kind of secure with who they are and there's no competition or, as you said, bad vibes.
Yeah.
And everyone's just checking each other out and it can be that way, right? Yeah. It doesn't have to be competitive. Like you said, there had to be a winner, but it didn't. Did it really matter at that point? Everyone was just having a great time and sharing.
Yeah, it really is a beautiful thing. And in those moments where I am placed in a competitive setting, I try to remember the fact that we're all creating art. And at the end of the day, art is very subjective. Yeah. And it's hard to say this art is better than that art because blah, 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 blah. There's no scale of why jazz, one person's jazz performing is better than another. There are aspects that some people might have preferences about, but there's no concrete way to say this is better than that.
Right. Yeah, once you get to a certain level, it's very subjective. Mm-hmm. And then the Jacksonville competition.
Yeah, for some reason, all jazz piano competitions have to be in Florida. I think that's just a government mandate. I'm not quite sure why, but the second one was in Jacksonville, Florida that I competed in. And that was a similar situation in the sense that it was five pianists, but that one doesn't have an age barrier in it. But the competition is a great way for the Jacksonville Jazz Festival just to kick off its festivities. It was Thursday night. The rest of the festival is Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And so it was a little bit trickier in terms of the competitive aspect because we didn't have a lot of time together as a group. There was no room where we could all hang out and play together. So we were a little bit more spread apart. Yeah. So we had moments where we talked and hanged, but it was very much like backstage while we're all waiting to perform. So it's just everyone was kind of in their own space. But it was a fabulous thing to do. And we each had three songs that we get to perform. We performed two trio tunes and a solo piano tune. And it was very inspiring to hear all these great musicians perform. And it was another one of those situations where it's just like, I don't know how they're going to pick anyone at all. There was one crowd favorite, who wasn't me, who just had all the chops in the world. Fantastic musician. And it sounded like he had dug deep into Tatum and Oscar. And he just did, he did a really great solo blues piece that was really stride and fast and energetic. And the audience really loved it. And they were just, it was a lot of gray hairs just because it was Thursday night. And, you know, a lot of an older crowd that was really into that style. And they had him up on their feet and they're all enjoying it. And then when it came time to announce the winner of the competition, they went third to first. And he was announced as the third place winner. And there were audible boos from the audience. And I was just sitting there like, oh my God, this crowd is vicious. What's going on here? And they went down the line. And I was lucky enough to be deemed first prize of the Jacksonville Jazz Piano Competition. And it was really, that was a big honor for me, but the biggest honor was that one of my, someone that I really take inspiration from recently, Aaron Parks, was one of the judges, and he came to me and we talked for a while after the concert, and it was interesting getting his perspective, and I mean, a lot of his perspective was, you have a long way to go. And I was like, okay, I'll take it.
Just to keep you on
the
right.
And the main idea of the thesis of what he was telling me was that you have a small nugget of a voice.
Wow.
And if you get rid of the extra stuff and dig past all that, you can really tone into that. And I hear that, but it's just going to take time. And that was very encouraging to me and inspiring. And it was a moment that I think about very often.
And now you're back at school.
Right? Back at school, finishing it up, yeah.
Back at it. Well, let's hear some more music. You've got a couple other tunes for us.
Sure, yeah. I'd love to play a piece of mine called Thermos. And you say, oh, that's kind of a weird title for a tune. But moving from Texas to Michigan has been quite the transition, going from the very hot weather to these cold, frigid days. And one morning, I was just practicing, and this melody and some of these chords came to me as I was just improvising a little bit. And I was looking at my thermos next to me with a nice warm cup of coffee inside of it. And I was just thinking how thankful I am to have that caffeine and that warmth early in the morning. So this is called Thermos.
thermos. Here's to the cold weather.
Yes, sir.
So coming from Texas, a big weather shift. So you mentioned UNT. Some people might not know what UNT is.
Oh, yeah.
So talk to us about school in Texas and then your transition up here to Michigan.
Yeah, UNT is where I got my undergraduate degree. It's the University of North Texas, and it's located about an hour away from Dallas and Dallas-Fort Worth in Texas. And it's actually the oldest jazz program ever. It's the first jazz program that's ever existed in the country. And some early jazz performers that you may not think of as, oh, they went to school? You wouldn't think of that. But like Herb Ellis went to UNT, and he's a fantastic alum of our program. And it's very much in it's a very strong program and a very large program. And because of that, there is sort of this competitive nature to it. But it's more of a competitive camaraderie. We're all very much encouraging each other to get better and to learn from one another. One of the main reasons that I actually went to UNT was because I was lucky enough to meet Professor Jen Barnes at New York State Allstate. And I was performing in the vocal jazz ensemble that year, and it was my senior year, and I really didn't know where I was going to go. I had a couple of schools in New York that I was really considering, but I wasn't super hyped about. And she took me aside before the first concert, and she said, "Hey, have you thought about UNT at all?" I was like, "I don't know, it's far away," and I thought it was expensive. And anyway, we were talking about it for a while, and it turns the thoughts that I had about that program were very different than what it's actually like. And she ended up getting me to come and visit, and then eventually I ended up studying in the program with her, but also in the jazz piano side with a bunch of different other professors like Dan Hurley and Pat Coyle, also very inspiring musicians to me. And I'm thankful for the experiences I had there.
Wow, Jen Barnes was in school here at the same time I was. We were in Gold Company together in the early 90s. So she teaches down there now, vocal jazz. Mm-hmm. And then also another Western alum, Quincy Davis, is now taking over the drum studio from the great Ed Sof, who built an amazing legacy and tradition down there. So there's quite a UNT connection here.
Dude, that's for sure.
I love it.
Quincy is a great addition to the program. I left before he came and took over the position, but I've heard great things about what he's doing for the program. Yeah. And definitely a different style from Ed Sof, but just as valid, and he's doing a lot of good things.
Yeah, he's great. So then you came up to Michigan. Mm-hmm. You packed your boots and your coat and your hat.
Well, I didn't really have anything to pack, because, but I packed all my warm weather clothes and then realized that they weren't much good to me. So I had, but yeah, it was quite the transition coming to here. And it's been a really valuable experience, and getting to work with Professor Fries and Matthew Fries, who is also a recent addition to the program. He came around the year I actually came to Western. And then also working with Greg Jasper's fantastic vocal faculty, getting that side of the picture and getting his knowledge from studio work. And it's been very rewarding, and I'm thankful for this.
Yeah, so when I met you, I was hearing about you as a great piano player. Mm-hmm. And then they said, "Oh yeah, he sings too." And so I think I may have heard you sing before I heard you play. Mm. So you were in Gold Company all of last year.
Yeah, all my first year.
And you had some pretty cool experiences.
That's for sure. Yeah, it was a challenging and interesting and fun year of working with Greg. And he's got a very great style of getting a group into shape. And we were lucky enough to take a set of music to Monterey, California, and compete in the Monterey Next Generation Jazz Festival in the vocal jazz category, and perform for a great list of judges, which included Sarah Gazarek and Michelle Weir. And it was a really rewarding experience to compete in that competition, but then also it was very validating for the group, because we were lucky enough to win in our category. And then we ended up going back to the actual Monterey Jazz Festival and performing as a group. It was just so rewarding to share that music.
Man, you're winning at jazz.
Oh, it's not exactly a sport, but I'm doing okay.
It's nice to be validated, as you say, and recognized and encouraged to say, okay, you're on the right track. Mm-hmm. You know, keep it going. So that's great. And after you receive your master's degree, then what's next?
Well, ideally, I'd like to move back to the East Coast. I very much love being close to my family, and my parents are still both located there. My brother's based in New Orleans, as I said before, and I've definitely visited a lot and enjoyed my time there. but it's not the city for me.
New Orleans is not.
It's too much of a party place. And I'm, you know, growing up at the piano, it's like I can spend hours just sitting at the instrument and playing, and I just don't need as much contact with people in a rowdy setting. I know New York is crowded, but it's like you can be alone in a crowd in New York. But in a place like New Orleans, it's just like everyone is very present. But yeah, I do want to move back to the East Coast, and that's the goal. I just have to figure out how to finance it and get there.
Would you like to live in Manhattan or Long Island by family, or what do you think?
Well, I've realized, as much as I love my family, that maybe to get off my feet, I might stay with them for a little bit, and they'd love that. But I know that I need space to grow as a musician and to exist on my own. And even though it's a nice, you know, it's a decent commute getting on the LIRR, Long Island Railroad, and traveling into the city, it's still an hour one way and an hour back. And if I want to check out any of the late music and play in jams and go to sessions, it's like those trains only run every hour and sometimes even more once it gets, you know, it might be every 2 hours or 3 hours after 2 a.m. And it's like, if I want to do those sessions and I really want to be present, I'll have to be closer to the city. Yeah. I don't think I can really, it seems like it's very hard to afford a place like directly in Manhattan, but further north, somewhere in the Bronx maybe, or in Brooklyn, something on the outskirts that I can easily get in. That seems like more of a reasonable plan.
Yeah.
I've heard New Jersey, but I don't know. Long Island and New Jersey, we don't really...
Hey, I lived in New Jersey. Hey, forget about it. I lived out there. And, you know, but I had a car.
Big deal.
And actually, where I lived in New Jersey, it was quicker to get into the city from where I was in New Jersey than it was in Brooklyn.
I've heard similar things, and that's why it's on the mind, on the noggin.
I mean, there's also the train that runs, obviously, from New Jersey, but... You'll figure all that out.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like those details kind of fall into place the closer you get to the event of actually moving.
Yeah. Well, let's hear some more music.
Yeah, I would love to share some more music with you. This next piece that I wrote is entitled Repeat, and it's R-E:PETE, and it's dedicated to my brother Pete. I wrote it while I was at the Aspen Jazz Workshop, and I was musing on keeping in touch with relatives and those close to you, and how it's not always easy, especially when you're traveling or you're working hard at something that you love and they're doing the same. So it was just me musing on the importance of keeping in touch with those that you love, and I do love my brother very much, so yeah, it's for him. Thank you.
The soulful Mr. Olinchu. Wow.
I'm trying.
Man, that was very soulful, man. I really dug that.
Appreciate it.
So how did that relate to Pete then? Were you thinking about some New Orleans kind of? How was that inspired?
I have memories of playing the blues with him a lot. Yeah. That was one of our favorite forms, and especially since we didn't know a lot of tunes. So we learned 12-bar blues, and then also we eventually learned the 16-bar blues. And this is kind of my take on a 16-bar blues, put in minor and with some weird changes. So it's kind of been, it's an arrangement, but it's more of a derangement, I'd say. 16-bar blues. But it's just, it's got some wackiness in, and I know that Pete and I, we're both kind of wacky in a sense. We have that shared DNA, that wackiness.
Yeah, had kind of a Bobby Timmons vibe to it.
Ooh, I didn't think of that, but thank you.
Yeah.
It's a high compliment.
Well, Nicholas Olinchu, it's been really, really great to have you here, to hear your music, hear your originals. And how can our listeners find out more about you online?
Sure. They can check out my website, which is nolinchu.com. So it's nolynciw.com. And there's samples of my music. And you can check out some video and audio of me playing and hear about my newsletter and check out that.
And you're on social media.
Oh, I'm also on social media. I do have a Facebook page for myself. It's just Nicholas Olinchu Music. You can also check me out on Instagram. And my handle is the same. It's nolynciw.
Lots of ways to connect with you.
That's for sure. Yeah, in this interconnected world, I have to be available.
Well, we'll certainly keep our eyes and ears out for you. And at your young age, I mean, I'm so excited for your future, man. I mean, you're already really playing great and so strong and sensitive and thoughtful. And you're a really, really cool guy. And that's going to take you far, I think. You know?
Well, thank you so much. That's very high praises from such a great musician and person yourself.
Well, let's play out the show with one last piece, Nicholas.
Yeah, I'd love to share my arrangement of Dream Dancing by Cole Porter. And here it is. Yeah, it's a fun little take on it. Hope you enjoy.